Today, I'm talking to Teresa Shelton. She is a local author of a book entitled The Sergeant's Daughter, a Memoir. Welcome, Teresa.
Hi, V. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, let's jump right in. Can you tell us a little bit about your memoir?
Yes, it is a coming-of-age memoir, as you've mentioned, about growing up with an abusive father who happened to be a sergeant in the Army. He was both physically and psychologically abusive. And my mother was complicit in his abuse, and she never really intervened to protect us. And so later I learned that her abuse was really emotional abuse as well. But although the subject matter is a little difficult and sometimes grim, there are also some good moments, and I can promise you it has a happy ending.
Now, like you said, the book touches on a very heavy subject, and I'm glad, like you said, it ends on a happy ending, but I'm just curious, what made you want to share your story?
You know, it was a journey and a transition. In my earlier days, especially when my children were young, I think I had the exact opposite feeling, and that is all these secrets would just die with me. It's in the past. It's not important. I've moved beyond those things. But I guess what I realized, especially after my children left home, is though, and the way I explained it to them is that, yes, it's in my past and it's back there, but kind of like our shadow, it's sort of behind us. It's back there all, but it's there all the time. And I guess I just sort of felt like at that point, then I just had this intrinsic need. I just have to write it down, get it out. And it definitely was a cathartic sort of process for me. And I just had to tell my story. I really didn't make a conscious choice. It just happened. And I just had to do it.
Yeah, and I think that's so important in the day and age we're living in. A lot of us have just been told to repress. That's not really okay. You know, we're starting to see that people need to tell their stories and open up to even begin that healing process. So I really commend you on that.
I agree, especially as women, right? I've had so many readers reach out to me and just thank me for giving a voice to what they also endured. And, you know, they call me courageous. I don't really feel all that courageous. I just feel like this is something I had to do. And I'm glad that in some way it helped them tell their story and feel better about the secrets. You know, that's what eats us up, I think, is the secrets of our past that we're forced to kind of carry as children. And then as we get on to our adulthood, we just carry on that sort of unhealthy behavior. That's probably another reason. But you're right, as women and even as individuals, we are sort of told to get over it.
And I think that's what made the Me Too movement so important for not only women, but, you know, all people that may have been abused in a way or another. It just helped bring light to this very heavy topic, but show that you're not alone. So I really thank you for just even being able to open up about that.
Thank you. And I know I'm doing some projecting, but I'm thinking, what would my life have been like in this environment where we're all captured, especially during quarantine? My heart just went out to the millions and millions of children who I knew. I had a very, very good image of what might be happening to some of them. And I know there's been a rise in domestic abuse and child abuse and sexual abuse during this quarantine. And so it's just one more opportunity to get the information out there and for people to know it happens to a lot of people that you would least suspect. And that is another one of the feedback that I've gotten from folks, is especially people who have known me for 25, 30 years. It's the truth I never would have known. And in a way that made me feel really good, you know, because obviously I've gotten over a lot of the damage that my parents did to me. But yet in another way, it made me feel like, oh gosh, it just really is so prevalent. Sure, somebody who looks like me has this happen to them. I've gotten a lot of good responses, like I said, but probably one of the ones that really set me back came from that speaks to this discussion too, that really set me back, was I had someone on Facebook reach out and said, you know, I really thought you were Black. I really thought you were Black until I saw your picture. Now, I didn't quite know how to take that, except in a very racist, like only people of color get abused. So that was is just another sort of education of people. Yes, white people get abused too. So do African Americans. So do Latinos. So do Asian Americans. It's not a race issue.
You brought up an interesting point. What do you think people can do to stop those stereotypes that one group just gets abused or this only happens to one type of person?
I think we're doing it. We're talking about it. You know, I wrote about it and shared my story. And I think I just would encourage others to as well. If you have experienced something like this, tell somebody about it. The secrets, like I said earlier, they just eat us up. So I think we're doing what we need to do to spread the story that, you know, it's just not minorities who experience this kind of abuse.
We don't want to leave anybody out the conversation. And I think that's what's happened in the past and why certain groups, you know, say, let's just leave it behind in the dust, but you really can't. So I think that's very important. What would you tell someone who is preparing themselves to write maybe about their experience or their life?
I would say start slowly and thoughtfully. I made initially unrealistic goals. I'm a goal-oriented person. I'll just put that out there. Anybody who knows me knows that I always have a project, and my goal in that project is to get it done as completely and as quickly as I can and move on to the next one. So I've never written anything in my life. No, my degree is in business management, so I'm more of a numbers person, not a word person. And when I finally said, okay, this is something that I have to do, I wrote down my objectives, and the number one objective was to get it done in a year. Well, it took 10. So that just put a lot of undue stress on me, on what was already a difficult process, where not only did I have to relive this event and write about it, but I put this unrealistic time frame deadline on myself. And so that was just a lot of undue stress that wasn't necessary. Then I would also just tell them, read every memoir that you can get your hands on. Then also there are actually books and podcasts on how to start the process, you know, on how to write a memoir. And I found those to be very, very helpful too. And the more you read, I think the better writer that you are. So those would be the two things I would say is don't put unrealistic restrictions and guidelines and timeline on yourself, and do your homework, be prepared by reading all of the memoirs that you can, and then to-do books as well.
Yes, it sounds like reading and really just using your resources really is kind of helping cope at the same time. And I saw in your book that you talked about music and books, and I was wondering, mm-hmm. Do you still find time to do anything with music?
Oh, I listen to music all the time. Right now, I'm on a Leon Bridges sort of kick. And anything that man sings, I'm going to be listening to. I also love Gary Clark Jr. and adored Amy Winehouse. That's kind of what's on my playlist now. But also Chris Stapleton. I mean, when he does one of his runs, I just love it. So yes, I listen to music all the time. We dance and carry on and be silly kind of as a family. And then, yes, I read more. Well, haven't we all during the COVID? But I read more now than I ever have. As you saw in the book, that was one of the crazy restrictions that my dad had, is that we were not allowed to read at home. As soon as I could, I just started trying to absorb as much as I possibly could, and kind of what I felt like get caught up on some of the things that my contemporaries even read as children. So yes, I find time to do both of those things and still enjoy them very much.
And I commend you for trying to cope and heal in a healthy way. Sometimes people turn to other measures. So yes. How would you suggest to, you know, someone that may be struggling, how to find an activity or something that may be positive for them to cope with? How would they find that, or what would you suggest?
And as you probably read in the book as well, you know, my oldest sister, unfortunately, she did turn to drugs as a way of dealing with her pain. And then, you know, both my youngest sister and I at a time sort of turned to food as well. So I would say the number one thing I would say to help would be to really try to find someone that you can begin to tell your secret to, whether that's a therapist, whether it's a teacher. For me, it was my college sociology professor. I was her teacher's assistant. And in those days, you had to grade papers and then post them manually, and it took hours. And so we would spend hours in her office, and just very gradually, and at that point, I hadn't told a soul, not even my husband, what was going on. And she just very slowly just started chipping away at my wall. And had it not been for her, I don't think I would have had the courage to even to tell my husband. And she was the person who said, you know, Teresa, if I could give you just one piece of advice, please tell your husband. And so I guess that's what I would say is just please tell someone. Let them, I think all you have to do is just start. If you just start, and if you just open up, and if you do break down some of those walls that your abuser has made you put up, and as soon as you make that association that I'm not telling anybody because they told me not to tell anybody, then I think you get your own power and you move forward. So just tell someone, anyone who will listen.
Yes, I think these safe spaces, like you're mentioning, are becoming more and more important. I know on a lot of college campuses now, they have safe zones or safe spaces. Yes. Where you can come and talk about what you need to talk about. I know something they have on the UIS campus at one time was different groups that were around different things. Like there was a grief group, and there was, yes, one for survivors of sexual assault. So I would encourage anybody looking to start a group or something like that, maybe even create a safe space so people don't feel alone.
And of course, another source that I forgot when you asked me the question the first time is your person of faith, whether it's your pastor or your priest or your rabbi. You know, that's also another safe place that you can begin to tell your story to. So that would be another access, I think, access that. Even if what I have found is even if you don't belong to that church and you just find yourself where that synagogue, I think if you just find yourself there, I think someone would help you.
Yes, I think someone is always willing to help. That's really important, I think. You know, I think some people think that nobody will want to listen to my story or care, mm-hmm, but people do care.
They do. They absolutely do. I definitely want the people of Springfield to know that the proceeds from the sale of the book are benefiting, the net proceeds are benefiting Habitat for Humanity of Sangamon County. So every dollar that we make goes directly to our local Habitat office. So I feel very, very fortunate to be affiliated with them.
How did you get involved with Habitat for Humanity?
Well, it's been on my list, you know, because I told you earlier, I always have to-do lists. And it's been on my list probably for a couple decades, but there were always other things, especially when I had children at home. I was on the Board of Education, and prior to that, I was also on the food bank. And then prior to that, you know, church activities and stuff like that. And if I take on something, I want to be able to do it well. So Habitat just kept getting to the bottom of the list as these other things kind of came up to the top. So finally, Colleen Stone is a good friend of mine, and she's the executive director. And I've known Colleen probably for about 25 years. And she took the executive director position about 5 or 6 years ago. And at that time, I knew, okay, it's probably, that was my sign, it's time for me to get involved. So initially it was just volunteering. And then I was, and I still am, what they call a nurturer, where once we have identified a family and they're in the program, I kind of mentor them for about a 2-year time frame. And then after about that 2-year time frame, then we usually are able to get them into a house. And I help them with, we have classes for potential homeowners, and where they learn about things that they just haven't had to think about before because they haven't been homeowners before. Things like insurance and taxes and credit references and, you know, your credit score and how to fix a leaky toilet. When do you call a service person? What kind of insurance should I get? Two other things too about lenders and kind of lenders that we have. And so then when it comes time to picking a house, then I have a little bit of design skill, and I help them pick siding and roofing and cabinets and flooring and countertops and all of those kind of things that some homeowners are a little anxious about. And now I'm on the board. I'm the secretary for our local Habitat affiliate.
Wow. So it sounds like a huge community effort.
I just love it. And it just is something that is just so important and fits right in with me, you know, in trying to help others that are less fortunate. I know that sounds real grand and all that sort of stuff, but honestly, it's very, very rewarding. I feel like I get more out of it than they do.
I know that it's always really good to give back to the community, do community service. And I think this kind of ties in with, you know, your book, you know, having that safe space. Now, to me, Habitat for Humanity is another safe space for people. So I think that ties in perfectly.
Thank you. Yes, I agree.
So one last thing I'll ask you. Overall, what are you hoping people take away after reading your memoir?
I think it's to make them feel less alone with the secrets that we're asked to keep as children, and to have the courage to speak to someone.
Teresa Shelton with V. Bonner on Shelton's memoir on Community Voices. After the break, Craig McFarland will be back to talk about Springfield's arts community. This is Community Voices on NPR Illinois 91.9 UIS.